It's Tuesday, April 23rd, and later today in Australia, the Australian cop accused of murdering couple Jesse Beard and Luke Davies in Sydney is due to appear in court again. Now, it seems like this appearance is more procedural than anything, but given the case is very high profile, there should be plenty of coverage. And of course, if you were keen to keep up to date, you can do at stuff.co.nz. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is What's Worth Talking About. The cost of living is pushing some people to halt their KiwiSaver payments, but a warning, there are hidden hooks in there. We have the latest twist in the hunt to find out what happened to a Kiwi woman who went missing in Miami 20 years ago, why a minister and the Waitangi Tribunal are currently battling it out in court, and science may have the answer to your boring, never-ending afternoons at work. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Contributions to long-term saving schemes like KiwiSaver are facing the chop in some households as the cost of living crisis hits New Zealanders hard in their back pocket. In fact, Newsable can reveal more people have suspended their KiwiSaver contributions due to financial hardship than at any point in the last decade. Inland revenue figures show, as of June last year, 1,691 people had deferred their contributions as a result of hardship, compared to just 219 in 2012 and 358 in 2019. Here to break down the reasons why is David Verry, a financial mentor based in Auckland with decades of experience in the banking sector. Kia ora, thank you for being here, David.
It's a pleasure to be here.
How bad do things need to get for people to take the nuclear option and stop all contributions to their KiwiSaver?
Things have to be very bad. I mean, we see that as probably being the second to last option that people will go to, other than people going through an insolvency or something like that. And we start working with clients. We do a budget. We work out expenses exceed income by, you know, so much per week. What can we do to address that situation? The first thing, and if it's nice if we can do it, can we somehow increase the income? You know, that's the beautiful way of doing it. If it's possible, whether it be borders, whether it be a part-time job, something like that, okay. If that's not there, or it might be a combination, what expenses can we reduce? What are the luxuries or nice-to-haves that we can take out of a budget so that we can try and get it to at least balance expenses? But if we're still facing that weekly deficit, more expenses than income, okay, then we start to turn to the likes of KiwiSaver suspension. Now, it can only be temporary. You can't turn off your KiwiSaver forever, and you don't want to turn it off forever because, let me assure you, when you retire, and many people are a long way off, but let me assure you, you're going to need quite a bit of extra money over and above the pension to survive.
If an employee cuts their KiwiSaver contribution, what then happens to the employer contribution? Is that gone?
Well, just it stops at the same. Again, it just stops as well. So if an employee will put through a, usually go through to IRD and say, I want to suspend, then the payroll people will get a notice to cease deducting KiwiSaver from the employee's salary or wage. At that point, the employer is not obliged to contribute their 3%. Now, look, I have come across situations where with clients who have suspended their KiwiSaver and their employers have carried on paying. So good on them.
I understand 1,700-odd is not the biggest number in terms of people who are deferring their contributions. However, what does it tell us about Kiwis who are doing it tough? What are you seeing on the ground?
Well, it's the trend. And that's what we're seeing on the ground is we're seeing increasing numbers of people coming through the door of budget services seeking assistance. And, of course, these are employed people.
Can you spell it out for us, David? What does suspending your KiwiSaver contributions mean for a person further down the track if it goes on for some time?
If you go into something like the Retirement Commission website and look at what they suggest people need to have set aside in addition to superannuation to get by.
I don't know if I want to know this answer, David.
The numbers are actually eye-watering. It is. You look at it, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars for individuals, depending on whether you have what they call a no-frills lifestyle or a I call it not luxuries lifestyle, but we'll call it a lifestyle type of living. And that's not talking about visiting your grandchildren in the Gold Coast each year or things like that. It's just actually, oh, look, we might be able to afford Sky TV or some streaming service. We might have a couple of beers and a bottle of wine, one per week. That's a bit of a lifestyle choice. But again, the no frills is you're living on the bare minimum. Superannuation is not going to do it for you. And I know it's a long, long way away for some people, but again, you will reach that point and you go, oh,
yeah,
gosh.
And we keep talking, we've talked a lot about the trend, so it will be very interesting to see where it ends up in another year's time. David Verry, financial mentor based in Auckland. Great to speak with you about all of this.
Lovely to talk to you.
I would be very interested to know if this is a situation you've found yourself in too. We love to hear your stories. So have you paused or halted KiwiSaver contributions due to the cost of living? Yes or no? We'll have a poll up on the NZ Stuff Instagram page, so do get your answers in. And if you've also got a KiwiSaver story you're happy to share with us, you can also email us, newsable@stuff.co.nz. There is a new twist in the hunt to find out what happened to a New Zealander who went missing in Miami 2 decades ago. Alicia Hannon was living the high life in Florida, involved in drug taking and partying on Jeffrey Epstein's island. Epstein, of course, being the infamous financier and sex offender. 24-year-old Alicia disappeared after being last seen leaving a luxury hotel in 2002. And now, a retired FBI agent believes she was murdered. Stuff reporter Katie Hamm has been following the case and joins us now. Kia ora.
Hello.
Remind us how this decades-old case resurfaced in the first place, Katie.
Yeah, so it was a bit of an odd story. Miami Beach Police Department has kind of a Missing Mondays series. They post someone who's been missing on their Twitter, hashtag Missing Monday. Mm. Up popped Alicia Hannon. At this point, I had nothing to do with it. We then get the Miami Herald latching on to that case. And her son, who's a New Zealander, lives and works in Ponsonby, which is where I live and work, sees that, gets in contact with Miami and suddenly thinks, hey, is there an angle we could be doing back here in New Zealand? Bizarrely, I'd met him doing a story about rotisserie chicken last year. And he just thought, hey, I know who does crime reporting. I'll drop her a text. And here we are.
How much do we know then about Alicia Hannon?
It's been a bit of a piecing together from what different people know about her. So you've got kind of the official records. You've got the missing persons report that was filed by a friend 3 weeks after she was last seen. So you can kind of piece together some bits from there. You know that she moved to Miami to be a model. She was a solo mum by this point. So she was spiraling down into this drug taking, this escort work to try and provide for her son, who is now Adrian, who lives down the road.
And what did police say at the time when she disappeared after her friend filed that missing persons report?
So at the time, they didn't really say anything. She was marked as a missing person as opposed to a homicide case. There was no body. There was no obvious crime scene. In the years that have kind of followed, it's become a cold case. They've said she's presumed dead. They suspect foul play was involved in that. They've never come out and kind of said what they think happened. Mm. We now know that on her official missing persons report, there's an ex-boyfriend at the time who's got a mark that means he's a suspect.
So why then has this retired FBI officer got involved? Does he specialise in cold cases?
Yeah, so he helped set up the FBI's cold case department. He's kind of worked on hundreds of cold cases. And I actually just actively approached him. We kind of felt like we'd reached a bit of an impasse with our investigation and just needed a second pair of eyes. So he very kindly had a look through everything I had and kind of talked me through his reckonings.
And tell me about these reckonings. Why is it that he believes she was murdered?
So one thing we spent a long time talking about is whether she just left of her own accord. What makes us think that she is the victim of foul play? So from his experience, he kind of talked me through how she doesn't fit what he called the profile of a missing person who would make themselves disappear. She had a loving family. She'd been back in New Zealand weeks before she was last seen. She kind of said, I have some loose ends to tie up. I'll be back. I've got a plan. She'd made it clear to friends and family around her that she planned on leaving what she described as a turbulent relationship. So to Bobby, who's our retired FBI agent, he just thought, usually when you find someone has made themselves disappear, they don't have that support system, which she did have.
Has anything new emerged that could help police and her son find out what happened all these years ago?
Bobby kind of talked me through, you know, what can spark them being reopened, kind of warming up the cold case. Mm. What he's kind of hoping is that through this reporting and pushing for more information that we stumble across a key witness, someone who didn't speak at the time, but for whatever reason is more comfortable talking now.
It's certainly a story that has gripped me and kept me intrigued since you first reported on it. Katie Hamm, staff reporter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I think you're conflating a whole bunch of issues.
Don't want to be held to account rising child abuse numbers.
You can manipulate crime statistics.
I promised I wouldn't have a tag to you about gotcha journalism.
Hang into the National Party's tagline there.
It would be a resignation offence if I didn't deliver tax reduction.
I'm not worried about it at all.
Nothing iffy in there. That sits with you perfectly fine.
That's what we're focused on.
Whatever happens in politics, the weird, the wonderful, the important, the thought-provoking, we got you. Listen to Tova wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're confused about what's going on with Children's Minister Karen Chua getting summoned by the Waitangi Tribunal, and you also want to then know why it's ended up in the High Court, you, my friend, are in luck, because that is exactly what we're just about to unpack. And to make sure you always get the unpacking of the big stories that you need, chuck us a like and a follow wherever you get your podcasts. Crown lawyers have gone to the High Court to try to stop the Minister for Children having to appear before the Waitangi Tribunal in what's been described by some as an all-out legal spectacle. The tribunal wanted to hear evidence from Karen Chua over why the government was repealing Section 7AA of the Oranga Tamariki Act. That section requires the chief executive of Oranga Tamariki to meet a duty to improve outcomes for tamariki, rangatahi and their whānau. Staff political reporter Glenn McConnell's been in court as this all plays out and joins us now to explain what it's all about. Kia ora, welcome back, Glenn.
Kia ora.
How has this ended up in the High Court when the summons came from the Waitangi Tribunal?
Yeah, it's been a long process. There are so many issues, so many debates going on because of this very controversial policy that is repealing treaty rights, getting rid of those from the Oranga Tamariki Act. Iwi say that will pretty much mean that if children, Māori children, are taken by the state, they could lose connection with their whakapapa. So they are very unhappy about that. Iwi and many Māori groups have promised to fight this all of the way. And that's included at the Waitangi Tribunal, where they successfully argued that Karen Shaw, the Minister for Children who's responsible for this law, should front up and explain what her thinking was. Now, Crown Law doesn't want her to go to the tribunal. She has not given written evidence, which was one option. And so they ended up issuing a summons. That has been challenged in the High Court. On Monday, there was a large debate. 15 lawyers in total in the room.
Wow.
Arguing about whether that Waitangi Tribunal has the power to summons a minister.
So we've already had political fallings out around all of this as well. Remind us what those disagreements were over.
Yeah, so you've got one issue. That's the policy. Is it a good policy?
Mm-hmm.
Second issue, does the Waitangi Tribunal have the power to summons a minister, to require them to come in and answer questions even if they don't want to? And the third issue is a very political one. It's a war of words between the coalition parties. The ACT Party, New Zealand First, have the Waitangi Tribunal, its powers, its existence, what it does, in their sights. They're promising reform.
Mm.
And they've issued some quite veiled threats on the back of this summons, suggesting the tribunal could be wound up or tied back, restricted, as a result of what it's doing now. Christopher Luxon, the Prime Minister, he's not happy about those comments because they almost certainly go against cabinet rules to say you shouldn't criticise judges. He called them ill-considered, kicking off a new drama with ACT leader David Seymour telling me on Friday that he's surprised to hear Luxon's concerns. He's surprised he heard it through the press. And so he'll be having a conversation with Christopher Luxon about how he's handled that. Well, he's actually in himself brought the issues to the press before going to the Prime Minister to discuss his concerns.
So has this happened before, Glenn, a minister being summoned to the Waitangi Tribunal?
Never before. Crown Law is arguing that this is unprecedented to use such powers against a minister. But it's not actually uncommon for ministers to answer questions at the Waitangi Tribunal. Most recently, we had the COVID response minister at the time, Chris Hipkins, answering questions about how the government handled its vaccination program and COVID in relation to Māori. But what's different now is that it seems pretty much the minister will not go to the tribunal unless she's dragged there kicking and screaming.
Well, what is the problem here? Why doesn't Karen Chaw want to be summoned, want to go to the Waitangi Tribunal?
And that's, I guess, the question, like black and white, why doesn't she want to answer their questions? I've asked her that and she didn't respond. She said she can't talk about it because it's now before the court. She's brought it to the court, hasn't she, using Crown law to argue that she shouldn't need to go to the Waitangi Tribunal.
Will anything be resolved quickly in the High Court, do you imagine?
We know that in mid-May, that's when the government plans to introduce that bill, and by that point, the tribunal no longer has the ability to consider what's going on. So if it isn't sorted out fairly soon, well, the chances go on. The minister will not be called to the Waitangi Tribunal.
Fascinating stuff. Stuff political reporter Glenn McConnell, always appreciate your time and thank you for unpacking all of that.
Thank you.
Science often has an answer for everything, and today's answer that it's given us is to those boring, seemingly never-ending final hours at work. Turns out, all you got to do is look at an image that has plenty of clutter in it. The research published in the Journal of Nature Human Behaviour and carried out by George Mason University, that's in Virginia in the States, says that looking at a picture or something that has lots of things in it but is also forgettable left participants thinking they'd been looking at it for a shorter period of time than the amount of time they'd actually spent looking at it. Does that make sense? It's a time essentially passed faster than they realised if they were looking at, say, a picture of like a messy pantry versus a picture of an empty warehouse. The researchers also got people to look at images that were quite basic, of neutral scenes that were more easy to memorise. And in those cases, people thought they'd been looking at them for longer than they actually had been. So, when you get the Tuesday afternoon itchies later today, Google image search world's messiest wardrobe, and according to the team from George Mason Uni, those hours will be flying on by. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells, and have I looked at a picture of clutter in the last 24 hours? I have no comment because my bosses are listening.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.